Number 3. Let us to this purpose consider the general issue of men's entering into temptation, and that of bad and good men, of ungrounded professors, and of the choicest saints. For the first, I shall offer but one or two texts of Scripture, Luke 8:13. They on the rock are they which, when they hear, receive the word with joy, and have no root but for a while believe. Well, how long do they believe? They are affected with the preaching of the word, and believe thereon. Make profession, bring forth some fruits. But until when do they abide? Says he, in the time of temptation they fall away. When once they enter into temptation, they are gone forever. Temptation withers all their profession and slays their souls. We see this accomplished every day. Men who have attended on the preaching of the gospel, been affected and delighted with it, that have made profession of it, and have been looked on, it may be, as believers, and thus have continued for some years. No sooner doth temptation befall them that hath vigor and permanency in it, but they are turned out of the way and are gone forever. They fall to hate the word they have delighted in, despise the professors of it, and are hardened in sin. So Matthew 7:26. He that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not is like unto a foolish man which built his house upon the sand. But what does this house of profession do? It shelters him, keeps him warm, and stands for a while. But, saith he, verse 27, when the rain descends, when the temptation comes, it falls utterly, and its fall is great. Judas follows our Savior 3 years, and all goes well with him. He no sooner enters into temptation. Satan hath got him and winnowed him, but he is gone. Demas will preach the gospel until the love of the world befall him, and he is utterly turned aside. It were endless to give instances of this. Entrance into temptation is, with this sort of man, an entrance into apostasy, more or less, in part or in whole. It faileth not. 2. For the saints of God themselves, let us see by some instances what issue they have had of their entering into temptation. I shall name a few. Adam was the son of God, Luke 3:38, created in the image of God, full of that integrity, righteousness, and holiness, which might be and was an imminent resemblance of the holiness of God. He had a far greater inherent stock of ability than we, and had nothing in him to entice or seduce him. Yet this Adam no sooner enters into temptation, but he is gone, lost, and ruined. He and all his posterity with him. What can we expect in the like condition, that have not only in our temptations as he had, a cunning devil to deal with, but a cursed world and a corrupt heart also? Abraham was a father of the faithful, whose faith is proposed as a pattern to all them that shall believe, yet he, entering twice into the same temptation, namely that of fear about his wife, was twice overpowered by it to the dishonor of God, and no doubt the disquietment of his own soul, Genesis 12:12-13, Genesis 20:2. David is called a man after God's own heart, by God himself. Yet what a dreadful thing is the story of his entering into temptation. He is no sooner entangled, but he is plunged into adultery, thence seeking deliverance by his own invention, like a poor creature in a toil. He is entangled more and more until he lies as one dead, under the power of sin and folly. I might mention Noah, Lot, Hezekiah, Peter, and the rest, whose temptations and falls therein are on record for our instruction. Certainly, he that hath any heart in these things cannot but say as the inhabitants of Samaria, upon the letter of Jehu, "Behold, two kings stood not before him. How shall we stand? O Lord, if such mighty pillars have been cast to the ground, such cedars blown down, how shall I stand before temptations? O keep me that I enter not in. Behold the footsteps of them that have gone in, Whom do you see retiring without a wound, a blemish at least? On this account would the apostle have us to exercise tenderness towards them that are fallen into sin. Galatians 6:1, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. He does not say, lest thou also sin, or fall, or be overtaken with a fault, but lest thou also be tempted. Thou seest the power of temptation in others, and knowest not how soon thou mayest be tempted, nor what will be the state and condition of thy soul thereupon. Assuredly, he that hath seen so many better, stronger men than himself fail and cast down in the trial, will think it incumbent on him to remember the battle, and if it be possible, to come there no more. Is it not a madness for a man that can scarce crawl up and down, he is so weak, which is the case of most of us? If he avoid not what he has seen giants foiled in and undertaking of, thou art yet whole and sound. Take heed of temptation, lest it be with thee as it was with Abraham, David, Lot, Peter, Hezekiah, the Galatians, who fell in the time of trial. In nothing doth the folly of the hearts of men show itself more openly in the days wherein we live than in this cursed boldness, after so many warnings from God and so many sad experiences every day under their eyes, of running into and putting themselves upon temptations. Any society, any company, any conditions of outward advantages, without once weighing what their strength or what the concernment of their poor souls is, they are ready for, though they go over the dead and the slain that in those ways and paths, but even now fell down before them, yet they will go on without regard or trembling. At this door are gone out hundreds, thousands of professors within a few years. But number 4, let us consider ourselves, what our weakness is, and what temptation is, its power and efficacy, with what it leads to. For ourselves, we are weakness itself. We have no strength, no power to withstand. Confidence of any strength in us is one great part of our weakness. It was so in Peter. He that says he can do anything can do nothing as he should. And which is worse, it is a worse kind of weakness that is in us, a weakness from treachery, a weakness arising from that party which every temptation hath in us. If a castle or fort be never so strong and well fortified, yet if there be a treacherous party within that is ready to betray it on every opportunity, there is no preserving it from the enemy. There are traitors in our hearts, ready to take part, to close and side with every temptation, and to give up all to them, yea, to solicit and bribe temptations to do the work, as traitors inside an enemy. Do not flatter yourselves that you shall hold out. There are secret lusts that lie lurking in your hearts, which perhaps now stir not, which as soon as any temptation befalls you, will rise, tumultuate, cry, disquiet, seduce, and never give over until they are either killed or satisfied. He that promises himself that the frame of his heart will be the same under a temptation as it is before, will be woefully mistaken. Am I a dog that I should do this thing? Says Hazael. Yea, thou wilt be such a dog if ever thou be king of Syria. Temptation from thy interest will unman thee. He that now abhors the thoughts of such and such a thing, if he once enters into temptation, will find his heart inflamed towards it, and all contrary reasonings overborne and silenced. He will deride his former fears, cast out his scruples, and contemn the consideration that he lived upon. Little did Peter think he should deny and forswear his master so soon as ever he was questioned whether he knew him or no. It was no better when the hour of temptation came. All resolutions were forgotten, all love to Christ buried. The present temptation closing with this carnal fear carried all before it. To handle this a little more distinctly, I shall consider the means of safety from the power of temptation, if we enter therein, that may be expected from ourselves. In that in general as to the spring and rise of them, and in particular as to the ways of exerting that strength we have, or seem to have. one. In general, all we can look for is from our hearts. What a man's heart is, that is he. But now, what is the heart of a man in such a season? First, suppose a man is not a believer, but only a professor of the gospel. What can the heart of such an one do? Proverbs 10:20, the heart of the wicked is little worth. And surely that which is little worth in anything is not much worth in this. A wicked man may in outward things be of great use, but come to his heart. That is false and a thing of naught. Now, withstanding of temptation is hard work. And when it comes like a flood, can such a rotten trifle as a wicked man's heart stand before it? But of these before, entering into temptation and apostasy is the same with them. Secondly, let it be whose heart it will, Proverbs 28:26, he that trusteth in his own heart is a fool. He that does so, be he what he will, in that he is foolish. Peter did so in his temptation. He trusted in his own heart. Though all men forsake thee, I will not. It was his folly. But why was it his folly? He shall not be delivered. It will not preserve him in snares. It will not deliver him in temptations. The heart of a man will promise him very fair before a temptation comes. Am I a dog, says Haziel, that I should do this thing? Though all men should deny thee, says Peter, I will not. Shall I do this evil? It cannot be. All the arguments that are suited to give check to the heart in such a condition are mustered up. Did not Peter think you do so? What? Deny my Master, the Son of God, my Redeemer who loves me? Can such ingratitude, unbelief, rebellion befall me? I will not do it. Shall then a man rest in it, that his heart will be steadfast? Let the wise man answer, he that trusteth in his own heart is a fool. The heart is deceitful, Jeremiah 17:9. We would not willingly trust anything wherein there is any deceit or guile. Here is that which is deceitful above all things. It hath a thousand shifts and treacheries that it will deal with. When it comes to the trial, every temptation will steal it away, Hosea 4:11. Generally, men's hearts deceive them no oftener than they do trust in them, and then they never fail so to do. Number 2. Consider the particular ways and means that such a heart has or can use to safeguard itself in the hour of temptation, and their insufficiency to that purpose will quickly appear. I shall instance in some few only. First, love of honor in the world. Reputation and esteem in the church, obtained by former profession and walking, is one of the heart's own weapons to defend itself in the hour of temptation. Shall such a one as I fly? I who have had such a reputation in the church of God, shall I now lose it by giving way to this lust, to this temptation, by closing with this or that public evil? This consideration hath such an influence on the spirits of some that they think it will be a shield and buckler against any assaults that may befall them. They will die a thousand times before they will forfeit that repute they have in the church of God. But alas, this is but a withe, or a new cord, to bind a giant temptation with. What think you of the third part of the stars of heaven, Revelations 12:4? Had they not shone in the firmament of the church? Were they not sensible, more than enough, of their own honor, height, usefulness, and reputation? But when the dragon comes with his temptation, he casts them down to the earth. Yea, great temptations will make men who have not a better defense insensibly fortify themselves against that dishonor and disreputation that their ways are attended with. Do we not know instances yet living of some who have ventured on compliances with wicked men after the glory of a long and useful profession, and within a while finding themselves cast down thereby from their reputation with the saints, have hardened themselves against it? And ended in apostasy, is John 15:6. This kept not Judas, it kept not Hymenaeus, nor Philetus, it kept not the stars of heaven, nor will it keep thee. Secondly, there is on the other side the consideration of shame, reproach, loss, and the like. This also men may put their trust in as a defense against temptations, and do not fear but to be safeguarded and preserved by it. They would not for the world bring that shame and reproach upon themselves that such and such miscarriages are attended with. Now, besides that, this consideration extends itself only to open sins, such as the world takes notice of and abhors, and so is of no use at all in such cases as wherein pretenses and colors may be invented and used, nor in public temptations to loose and careless walking, like those of our days, nor in cases that may be disputable in themselves, though expressly sinful to the consciences of persons under temptation, nor in heart sins, in all which in most other cases of temptation there are innumerable reliefs ready to be tendered to the heart against this consideration. Besides all this, I say, we see by experience how easily this cord is broken when once the heart begins to be entangled. Each corner of the land is full of examples to this purpose. Thirdly, they have yet that which outweighs these lesser considerations, namely, that they will not wound their own consciences and disturb their peace and bring themselves in danger of hell fire. This, surely, if anything, will preserve men in the hour of temptation. They will not lavish away their peace, nor venture their souls by running on God in the thick bosses of his buckler. What can be of more efficacy and prevalency? I confess this is of great importance. And oh, that it were more pondered than it is, that we laid more weight upon the preservation of our peace with God than we do. Yet I say that even this consideration in him who is otherwhere off from his watch, and doth not make it his work to follow the other rules insisted on, it will not preserve him. For first, the peace of such an one may be false peace or security, made up of presumption and false hopes. Yea, though he be a believer, it may be so. Such was David's peace after his sin, before Nathan came to him. Such was Laodicea's peace when ready to perish, and Sardis, her peace when dying. What would secure a soul that it is otherwise, seeing it is supposed that it doth not universally labor to keep the word of Christ's patience and to be watchful in all things? Think you that the peace of many in these days will be found to be true peace at last? Nothing less. They go alive down to hell, and death will have dominion over them in the morning. Now if a man's peace be such, do you think that can preserve him which cannot preserve itself? It will give way at the first vigorous assault of a temptation in its height and hour. Like a broken reed it will run into the hand of him that leaneth on it. But secondly, suppose the peace cared for and proposed to safeguard the soul be true and good, yet when all is laid up in this one bottom, when the hour of temptation comes, so many reliefs will be tendered against this consideration as will make it useless. This evil is small. It is questionable. It falls not openly and downright upon conscience. I do but fear consequences. It may be I may keep my peace notwithstanding. Others of the people of God have fallen and yet kept or recovered their peace. If it be lost for a season, it may be obtained again. I will not solicit its station any more. Or, though peace be lost, safety may remain. And 1,000 sure pleas there are, which are all planted as batteries against this fort, so that it cannot long hold out. Thirdly, to fixing on this particular only is to make good one passage or entrance, whilst the enemy assaults us round about. It is true, a little armor would serve to defend a man if he might choose where his enemy should strike him, but we are commanded to take the whole armor of God if we intend to resist and stand, Ephesians 6. This we speak of is but one piece, and when our eye is only to that, temptation may enter and prevail 20 other ways. For instance, A man may be tempted to worldliness, unjust gain, revenge, vainglory, or the like. If he fortify himself alone with this consideration, he will not do this thing, and wound his conscience, and lose his peace, fixing his eye on this particular, and counting himself safe while he is not overcome on that hand. It may be neglect of private communion with God, sensuality and the like, do creep in, and he is not one jot in a better condition than if he had fallen under the power of that part of the temptation which was most visibly pressing on him. Experience gives to see that this doth and will fail also. There is no saint of God but puts a valuation on the peace he hath. Yet how many of them fail in the day of temptation? Fourthly, but yet they have another consideration also, and that is of vileness of sinning against God. How shall they do the thing and sin against God, the God of their mercies, of their salvation? How shall they wound Jesus Christ, who died for them? This surely cannot but preserve them. I answer first, we see every day this consideration failing also. There is no child of God that is overcome of temptation but overcomes this consideration. It is not then a sure and infallible defensive. Secondly, this consideration is twofold. Either it expresses the thoughts of the soul with particular reference to the temptation contended with, and then it will not preserve it, or it expresses the universal habitual frame of heart that is in us, upon all accounts, and then it falls in with what I shall tender as a universal medicine and remedy in this case, and the process of this discourse, whereof afterward. Consider the power of temptation, partly from what was showed before, from the effects and fruits of it in the saints of old, partly from other effects in general as we find ascribed to it. Is one, it will darken the mind, that a man shall not be able to make a right judgment of things, so as he did before he entered into it. As in the men of the world, the God of this world blinds their minds that they should not see the glory of Christ in the gospel, 2 Corinthians 4:4, and whoredom and wine and new wine take away their hearts, Hosea 4:11. So it is in the nature of every temptation, more or less, to take away the heart or to darken the understanding of the person tempted. And this it does divers ways. First, by fixing the imagination and the thoughts upon the object whereto it tends, so that the mind shall be diverted from the consideration of the things that would relieve and succor it in the state wherein it is. A man is tempted to apprehend that he is forsaken of God, that he is an object of his hatred, that he hath no interest in Christ. By the craft of Satan, the mind shall be so fixed to the consideration of this state and condition, with the distress of it, that he shall not be able to manage any of the reliefs suggested and tendered to him against it, but follow the fullness of his own thoughts, shall walk on in darkness and have no light. I say, a temptation will so possess and fill the mind with thoughtfulness of itself and the matter of it, that it will take off from that clear consideration of things which otherwise it might and would have. And those things whereof the mind was wont to have a vigorous sense, to keep it from sin, will by this means come to have no force or efficacy with it. Nay, it will commonly bring men to that state and condition that when others, to whom their estate is known, are speaking to them the things that concern their deliverance and peace, their minds will be so possessed with the matter of their temptation as not at all to understand, scarce to hear one word that is spoken to them. Secondly, by woeful entangling of the affections, which, when they are engaged, what influence they have in blinding the mind and darkening the understanding is known. If any know it not, let him but open his eyes in these days, and he will quickly learn it. By what ways and means it is that engaged affections will becloud the mind and darken it, I shall not now declare. Only I say, give me a man engaged in hope, love, fear, in reference to any particulars wherein he ought not, and I shall quickly show you wherein he is darkened and blinded. This, then, you will fail in if you enter into temptation. The present judgment you have of things will not be utterly altered, but darkened and rendered infirm to influence the will and master the affections. These, being set at liberty by temptation, will run on in madness. For with detestation of sin, abhorring of it, terrors of the Lord, sense of love, presence of Christ crucified, all depart, and leave the heart a prey to its enemy. Thirdly, temptation will give oil and fuel to our lusts, incite, provoke, and make them tumultuate and rage beyond measure, tendering a lust, a corruption, a suitable object, advantage, occasion, it heightens and exasperates it, makes it for a season wholly predominant. So dealt it with carnal fear in Peter, with pride in Hezekiah, with covetousness in Achan, with uncleanness in David, with worldliness in Demas, with ambition in Diotrephes. It will lay the reins on the neck of a lust, and put spurs to the sides of it, that it may rush forward like a horse into the battle. A man knows not the pride, fury, madness of a corruption until it meet with a suitable temptation. And what now will a poor soul think to do? His mind is darkened, his affections entangled, his lusts inflamed and provoked, his relief is defeated, and what will be the issue of such a condition? 3. Consider that temptations are either public or private, and let us a little view the efficacy and power of them apart. There are public temptations, such as that mentioned, Revelations 3:10, that was to come upon the world to try them that dwell upon the earth, or a combination of persecution and seduction for the trial of a careless generation of professors. Now concerning such a temptation, consider that first, it hath an efficacy in respect of God, who sends it to revenge the neglect and contempt of the gospel on the one hand, and treachery of false professors on the other. Hence it will certainly accomplish what it receives commission from him to do. When Satan offered his service to go forth and seduce Ahab that he might fall, God says to him, "Thou shalt persuade him and prevail also. Go forth and do so." 1 Kings 22, verse 22. He is permitted as to his wickedness and commissionated as to the event and punishment intended. When the Christian world was to be given up to folly and false worship for their neglect of the truth and their naked, barren, fruitless, Christ-dishonoring profession, it is said of the temptation that fell upon them that God shall send them strong delusion that they should believe a lie, 2 Thessalonians 2:11. That comes so from God in a judiciary manner, hath a power with it, and shall prevail. That selfish, spiritually slothful, careless, and worldly frame of spirit, which in these days hath infected almost a body of professors, if it have a commission from God to kill hypocrites, to wound negligent saints, to break their bones and make them scandalous, that they may be ashamed, shall it not have a power and efficacy so to do? What work has the spirit of error made amongst us? Is it not from hence that as some men delighted not to retain God in their hearts, so he hath given them up to a reprobate mind, Romans 1:28? A man would think it strange, yea, it is a matter of amazement, to see persons of a sober spirit pretending to great things in the ways of God, overcome, captivated, ensnared, destroyed by weak means, sottish opinions, foolish imaginations, such as a man would think it impossible that they should ever lay hold on sensible or rational men, much less on professors of the gospel. But that which God will have to be strong, let us not think weak. No strength, but the strength of God can stand in the way of the weakest things of the world that are commissionated from God for any end or purpose whatever. Secondly, there is in such temptations the secret insinuation of examples in those that are accounted godly in our professors, Matthew 24:12. Because iniquity shall abound, the love of many shall wax cold. The abounding of iniquity in some will insensibly cast water on the zeal and love of others, that by little and little it shall wax cold. Some begin to grow negligent, careless, worldly, wanton. They break the ice towards the pleasing of the flesh. At first others blame, judge them, perhaps reprove them. In a short space, their love also waxes cold, and the brunt being over, they also conform to them and are cast into the same mold with them. A little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Paul repeats this saying twice, 1 Corinthians 5:6 and Galatians 5:9. He would have us take notice of it, and it is of the danger of the infection of the whole body from the ill examples of some whereof he speaks. We know how insensibly leaven proceeds to give a savor to the whole, so it is termed a root of bitterness that springs up and defiles many. Hebrews 12:15. If one little piece of leaven, if one bitter root, may endanger the whole, how much more when there are many roots of that nature and much leaven is scattered abroad? It is easy following a multitude to do evil and saying, a conspiracy, to them to whom the people say, a conspiracy. Would anyone have thought it possible that such and such professors in our day should have fallen into ways of self, of flesh, of the world, to play at cards, dice, revel, dance, to neglect family, closet duties, to be proud, haughty, ambitious, worldly, covetous, oppressive, or that they should be turned away after foolish, vain, ridiculous opinions, deserting the gospel of Christ? In which too lies a great temptation that has come on us, the inhabitants of this world, to try us. But does not every man see that this has come to pass? And may we not see how it has come to pass? Some loose, empty professors, who had never more than a form of godliness when they had served their turn of that, began the way to them. Then others began a little to comply, and to please the flesh in so doing. This by little and little hath reached even the top boughs and branches of our profession, until almost all flesh hath corrupted its way, and he that departeth from these iniquities makes his name a prey, if not his person. Thirdly, public temptations are usually accompanied with strong reasons and pretenses that are too hard for men, or at least insensibly prevail on them to an undervaluation of the evil whereunto the temptation leads, to give strength to that complicated temptation which in these days has even cast down the people of God from their excellency, hath cut their locks, and made them become like other men. How full is this world of specious pretenses and pleadings! As there is a liberty and freedom of Christians delivered from a bondage frame, this is a door that, in my own observation, I have seen sundry going out at, into sensuality and apostasy, beginning at a light conversation, proceeding to a neglect of the Sabbath, public and private duties, ending in dissoluteness and profaneness. And then there is leaving of public things to providence, being contented with what is, things good in themselves, but disputed into wretched, carnal compliances, and the utter ruin of all zeal for God, the interest of Christ, or his people in the world. These and the like considerations, joined with the ease and plenty, the greatness and promotion of professors, has so brought things about, that whereas we have by providence shifted places with the men of the world, we have by sin shifted spirits with them also. We are like a plantation of men carried into a foreign country. In a short space, they degenerate from the manners of the people from whence they came and fall into that of the country whereunto they are brought, as if there were something in the soil and the air that transformed them. Give me leave a little to follow my similitude. He that should see the prevailing party of these nations, many of those in rule, power, favor, with all their adherents, and remember that they were a colony of Puritans, whose habitation was in a low place, as the prophet speaks of the city of God, translated by a high hand to the mountains they now possess, cannot but wonder how soon they have forgot the customs, manners, ways of their own old people, and are cast into the mold of them that went before them in the places whereunto they are translated. I speak of us all, especially of us who are amongst the lowest of the people, where perhaps this iniquity doth most abound. What were those before us that we are not? What did they that we do not? Prosperity has slain the foolish and wounded the wise. Number 2. Suppose the temptation is private. This has been spoken to before. I shall add 2 things. First, its union and incorporation with lust, whereby it gets within the soul and lies at the bottom of its actings. John tells us, 1 Epistle 2:16, that the things that are in the world are the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Now, it is evident that all these things are principally in the subject, not in the object, in the heart, not in the world. But they are said to be in the world because the world gets into them, mixes itself with them, unites, incorporates. As faith and the promises are said to be mixed, Hebrews 4:2, so our lust and temptation are mixed. They twine together, receive mutual improvement from one another, grow each of them higher and higher by the mutual strength they administer to one another. Now, by this means, temptation gets so deep in the heart that no contrary reasonings can reach to it. Nothing but what can kill the lust can conquer the temptation. Like leprosy that has mingled itself with the wall itself must be pulled down, or the leprosy will not be cured. Like a gangrene that mixes poison with the blood and spirits and cannot be separated from the place where it is, but both must be cut off together. For instance, in David's temptation to uncleanness, 10,000 considerations might have been taken in to stop the mouth of the temptation, but it had united itself with his lust, and nothing but the killing of that could destroy it, or get him the conquest. This deceives many a one. They have some pressing temptation that, having got some advantages, is urgent upon them. They pray against it, oppose it with all powerful considerations, such as whereof everyone seems sufficient to conquer and destroy it, at least to overpower it, that it should never be troublesome any more. But no good is done, no ground is got or obtained, yea, it grows upon them more and more. What is the reason of it? It hath incorporated and united itself with the lust, and is safe from all the opposition they make. If they would make work indeed, they are to set upon the whole of the lust itself, their ambition, pride, worldliness, sensuality, or whatever it be, that the temptation is united with. All other dealings with it are like tamperings with a prevailing gangrene. The part or whole may be preserved a little while in great torment. Excision or death must come at last. The soul may cruciate itself for a season with such a procedure, but it comes to this. Its lust must die, or the soul must die. Secondly, in what part soever of the soul the lust be seated wherewith the temptation is united, it draws after it the whole soul by one means or other, and so prevents or anticipates any opposition. Suppose it be a lust of the mind, as there are lusts of the mind and uncleanness of the spirit, such as ambition, vainglory, and the like? What a world of ways hath the understanding to bridle the affections that they should not so tenaciously cleave to God, seeing, in what it aimeth at, there is so much to give them contentment and satisfaction. It will not only prevent all the reasonings of the mind which it doth necessarily, being like a bloody infirmity in the eyes, presenting all things to the common sense and perception in that hue and color, but it will draw the whole soul on other accounts and collateral considerations into the same frame. It promises the whole a share in the spoil aimed at, as Judas's money that he first desired from covetousness was to be shared among all his lusts, or be it in the more sensual part, the first possesseth the affections. What prejudices they will bring upon the understanding, how will they bribe it to an acquiescence, what arguments, what hopes they will supply it with, cannot easily be expressed, as was before showed. In brief, there is no particular temptation, but when it is in its hour, it hath such a consideration of assistance from things good, evil, indifferent, is fed by so many considerations that seem to be most alien and foreign to it, in some cases has such specious pleas and pretenses, that its strength will easily be acknowledged.
This Reformation audio track is a production of Stillwater's Revival Books. SWRB makes thousands of classic Reformation resources available, free and for sale, in audio, video, and printed formats. Our many free resources, as well as our complete mail-order catalog, containing thousands of classic and contemporary Puritan and Reform books, tapes, and videos at great discounts, is on the web at www.swrb.com. We can also be reached by email at swrb@swrb.com, by phone at 780-450-3730, by fax at 780-468-1096, or by mail at 4710-37A Avenue, Edmonton, that's EDMONTON, Alberta, abbreviated capital A, capital B, Canada, T6L3T5. You may also request a free printed catalog. And remember that John Calvin, in defending the Reformation's regulative principle of worship, or what is sometimes called the scriptural law of worship, commenting on the words of God, "which I commanded them not, neither came into my heart," from his commentary on Jeremiah 7:31, writes, "God here cuts off from men every occasion for making evasions, since he condemns by this one phrase, 'I have not commanded them,' whatever the Jews devised. There is then no other argument needed to condemn superstitions than that they are not commanded by God. For when men allow themselves to worship God according to their own fancies, and attend not to his commands, they pervert true religion. And if this principle is adopted by the papists, all those fictitious modes of worship in which they absurdly exercise themselves would fall to the ground. It is indeed a horrible thing for the papists to seek to discharge their duties towards God by performing their own superstitions. There is an immense number of them, as it is well known, and as it manifestly appears. Were they to admit this principle, that we cannot rightly worship God except by obeying his word, they would be delivered from their deep abyss of error. The prophet's words, then, are very important, when he says that God had commanded no such thing, and that it never came to his mind, as though he had said that men assume too much wisdom when they devise what he never required, nay, what he never knew."